We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
All right, I'm friends with Ernest Hemingway on Facebook. One of the things he posted a couple of weeks back when we were supposed to talk about this is a quote about his view of heaven. Heaven would be a big bull ring with me holding two Barrera seats and a trout stream outside that no one else was allowed to fish in, and two lovely houses in the town, one where I would have my wife and children and be monogamous and love them truly. And while the other, where I would have my nine beautiful mistresses on nine different floors. And that was a letter to his friend F. Scott Fitzgerald, the guy that wrote The Great Gatsby. And the top comment on Facebook was from a chick, a woman, that said, "I want to meet a man who can keep 10 women happy." So you recommended a book to me. Shit, what's the name of it? Pimp?
Pimp.
Yeah, it's just Pimp,
it's
right?
Pimp, The Story of My Life.
Story of My Life by Iceberg Slim. It's really the story by and about a man who just did just that. Made a career out of, or at least in his early life, out of keeping several women happy. If that's one way to put it.
Yeah, I don't know if happy is the right word for it.
The way he described it, in the movie, there's a movie, the documentary about him. In a response to Chris Rock's statement that we are fascinated, or society is fascinated by jobs that require no work, which is what he kind of referred to as the pimp life, as a job that requires no work, because you're essentially doing nothing except managing your employees. And Iceberg Slim responded to that with a description of his job, which is, you had to know how to control and how to operate a stable. A stable is a collection of girls. How to dazzle, befuddle, bewitch, entrance, and hypnotize a woman. Not only one woman, but eight or nine, and to keep them in harmonious effort. And if you think that isn't a job, my friend, you ask any married man. Of course, there's a little tinge of, what would you call that? Does that sound sexist to you?
No, it's not. It's not sexist at all. It's a fact that it's extremely difficult to deal with women. And
so you might be asking yourself, why the fuck are two guys that have a jiu-jitsu podcast talking about women? First of all, fuck you. This isn't a jiu-jitsu podcast. And yeah, like you said, we're all about challenging ourselves and all about the field of battle, and there's no better battling than that of a relationship. How did you come across this book, this guy?
I think it might have been an interview with Ice-T. I used to be a big Ice-T fan when I was younger. I used to love his music. And I think I was like watching a YouTube interview with him or something, and he said that he took his name from... Maybe I was reading... I have Ice-T's book as well. It's sort of similar.
Autobiography?
Yeah, yeah. I have his. And he said that he got his name... He took his name from Iceberg Slim, who was the biggest pimp of all times, according to pimp culture.
But did you ever get a sense... Now, I know you're a fan of Ice-T, and I don't know shit about him, but I saw in the documentary... Did you get a sense that Ice-T's just trying to be... what Iceberg Slim really was? Like, there's a certain sense, pretend nature of...
Ice-T is very Hollywood now, but where he came from, I think he was a serious criminal, a pimp, all that stuff when he was younger. I don't think he was anywhere near the level of Iceberg Slim, but I remember watching, you ever watch Pimps Up, Hose Down? It was like a documentary they did on HBO, and they showed... this thing called like the Players Ball, where all like the pimps in New York kind of get together.
Yeah,
and
this is a conference.
Yeah, it's kind of like I guess they award like the best pimp of the year every year or something. And he was there with like all the real pimps. You know, he was like well respected among real pimps. So I think like I said, Ice-T now is a very Hollywood dude, but he's also a real dude too, you know.
So the interesting thing about Iceberg Slim is that he ended up supposedly quitting the pimp life, right? And he married a white girl, had ironically enough three daughters and a son. you know, from what I saw, it looked like he was actually a really good father. Surprisingly, he was a loner. You know, this guy's a smart motherfucker, really. I mean, you wouldn't know anything about being a loner, right?
No, he's definitely a smart dude. He's you have to be, like you said, to handle nine women, you have to be, to handle one woman properly, you have to be 10 steps ahead. You have to be very smart. You have to understand more than just like a man's way of thinking. You have to really understand a woman's way of thinking.
You know, there's a reason why his book is under philosophy in Amazon. Is, you know, the reason they call him Iceberg is really you don't want to reveal your emotions. You don't want to show what you're thinking or your weaknesses. A lot of the things I saw are kind of instincts that I've built up through having a lot of relationships myself, and I'm not sure I can explain why that is the way it should be. I wish it wasn't. I wish you could sit down and logically, like, talk shit out.
Right. I mean, it's probably going to sound a little weird, but I identified with the ice cold part of his book because it's something I sort of try to apply to everything in life. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Fighting too, right?
Fighting, yeah. Whatever you're doing, you don't want to let emotions get in your way. You know what I mean? And that's why I'll never have a girl work in the street and, you know, try to take her money. But there is a lot of pimp philosophy that can apply to all areas of life. You know,
first of all, let me just say that everything we say about our personal lives in this and any opinions we say, we don't actually believe this is all for entertainment purposes.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
My lawyers told me to say this. So this isn't Lex Friedman, and I'm not talking to Tim Carpenter. What do you think about what Iceberg Slim described as the pleasure that he gained from the pimp life is that there's a certain... this is something we talked about wrestling before, is when you break the will of your opponent in wrestling. I mean, there is a pleasure that he described in controlling not just a woman. It's not about controlling a woman. It's about controlling another person who's a criminal.
Right.
Just like you. So a smart, like clever street person who she knows her shit. She's been hustling her whole fucking life, and here you are essentially out hustling her, right? Out thinking her.
Which is and so we could apply this to like a regular relationship. Like a pimp prostitute relationship is like a extremely exaggerated, perverse,
right,
version of a regular male female relationship. Because most of the time, most guys are completely at the mercy of what a woman wants to do, because they don't really understand what will make them happy. Because
yeah, perfectly peaceful existence is not a happy existence.
No, right? No. That's death to them.
There needs to be tension and
It just needs to be emotion, and
right.
If it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. It could be, and in fact, a lot of times the bad is what they prefer, you know?
And I don't know if it's about women. I think that's probably true with guys too. Actually, I don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about, because, you know, a lot of this is really personal, like, experience. So you might be the type of dude that hangs out at the library all the time, so those are the kind of chicks you're going to meet. They're probably going to be freaks. They're probably, you know, there's the people that, like, the nerds are really the biggest freaks a lot of times.
I guess they're hanging out in libraries then.
You know, so, like, our own personal experience, you know, I haven't been with 100 girls, so that, the number of girls I've been with is what I've based my whole understanding of life on. And so that might not be a correct generalization of relationships in the
Well, you kind of have to make generalizations. You know what I mean? You can't.
Yeah, but so you have a definitely have a dominant personality.
Yeah.
So we're not going to argue with that. I tend to have a dominant personality. Yeah, just for the record, Tim has been staring at me for the last 20 minutes. No, so your perspective on relationships is going to be colored significantly by the fact that you've been with women that are attracted to the dominant personality.
Right, right.
So there might... The whole question here is where does feminism fit into the story of Iceberg Slim? You know, where does the idea that the women and men are equal, not just in the, you know, in the rights and opportunities, but also just that the roles of women and men are not necessarily defined by society, that a woman can be very masculine and a guy could be very feminine in a relationship, can be submissive and dominant. It could be two dominants or something. You could have, what is it? What did the Mormons have?
Polygamy?
Yeah. Those kinds of relationships. So what's your take on feminism, Tim Carpenter?
I don't really know too much about feminism. Like, I don't know the exact definition of feminism.
So there's two kinds of feminism, I think. One is one you can't, or this is that we all kind of believe in, is the fight for rights of women. You know,
right. That's cool.
Yeah. To vote, to do these kind of things. But there's the other sort of the feminism that was born in the sexual revolution of like the 60s that saw the gender roles, you know, that you kind of, a woman is... You know, the 50s and 60s, early 60s was like, it was, which is what my parents still believe, and a lot of places in the world still believe that kind of it's okay for the woman to be, like, it's beautiful for the woman to raise the children, to stay at home,
to be a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is beautiful if a woman is being a woman.
Yeah, well, but that's your view of women. That's, so you have put women in a certain gender role, which a lot of people do, like my mom does. You know, everybody I know that, you know, come from Russia and a lot of Eastern European countries are definitely like that. But in America, there's been this, you know, the revolution that kind of is resistant to that, into forcing people into different roles where, you know, if you...
That's because So all those like other like European countries kind of have their own culture. Each country sort of has its own culture, where America is just a big mess of every culture, everything. So no one really knows how to act. You know what I mean?
Do you know what a furry party is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I just recently learned about that.
People get dressed up as, like, animals and then they fuck each other?
Yeah. This is a thing, and I learned about this. I don't think it's real still.
It's real.
I've seen... You have experience with this?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think I've seen almost every... You ever watch Real Sex on HBO? They're like these little hour documentaries about, like, they would always have like weird, there's like a weird sex culture, like a subculture around.
Yeah.
And there's all these like little things like that, like furries and, you know, there's people that get dressed up like superheroes and all kinds of stuff, you know, where they try to like, I don't know, if that's your thing, that's cool. I mean, I've heard of people going that they have like furry conventions, you know, I think it's big at like Comic-Con and stuff like that.
I guess that's how you get started. That's like your gateway drug. Is you dress up as Superman and a Catwoman once, and then all of a sudden you realize
you're a cat.
Yeah, and then you fuck somebody wearing a Batman costume, and you're like, "This is pretty good." And that's how addictions start. And that's one of, we live in definitely an evolving world. I printed out this thing I saw on C-SPAN or something. I saw this was all from a couple weeks ago. This is like statistics on the median age of the first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That for guys, it went from 22 years old to 28 years old in the last 50 years. So we used to get married at 22, and then now it's 28. Where the fuck are you, Tim? You're behind, man.
I'm way behind.
And it used to be...
Or I actually think I'm way ahead, because I think that marriage isn't going to be around much longer. I think there's a lot of things that are... A lot of like institutions that are around from a long time ago that don't really make much sense anymore.
Yeah, where do you think marriage will be like at the end of 21st century? when your grandchildren.
I'll still be here.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, fucking in a
cryo chamber or something. Yeah,
because you do jiu-jitsu, man. You're going to be all broken and shit.
I mean, I don't think it'll either be a lot different. It's already a billion times different than it was. You know, it's like, I remember taking a sociology course in college, and we talked about marriage a little bit in that. And the lady said it was mostly a economic thing. Like, it was originally, it was more of like an economic thing. You know what I mean? Not really for romance or love. It was for I don't know,
like, stability. Yeah,
yeah, stability in territories and shit like that, or villages or whatever. And but we've changed into a something that is completely ridiculous, where it's you make your entire self-worth based around a romantic relationship. And whether or not that works for your entire life.
So you don't think marriage is a good thing overall? So what do you think of monogamy?
That's something you can't generalize, because I think for some people it's great, and for some people it's horrible. You know, some people I think it would be impossible to do, and some people I think it would be impossible to not be monogamous.
So you think there's people that are the people that are okay being monogamous? You don't think they're suppressing some deep urges, like the you know. Like, I mean, like we're all suppressing an urge to go to a furry party, or
well, I think we're all suppressing deep urges. I mean, you have to live without, you know, in this society. But
probably murder of some kind or another.
Murder, all those things are like, you know, that's what happens in nature. Yeah, we all suppress stuff, but I think for some people the like the conditioning that they've had can take over that, where they might not even think about it, that it's a suppressed thing. They might just make them happy, you know.
Right.
And for other people it might not. But that's something I think, and you see marriage went from, like I was saying, it was an economic thing, then it was something about just a man and woman being in love forever. And now there's gay marriage, there's open marriage, there's different kinds of marriage now. And there's divorce.
And the number of some of the other statistics are, like, the number of people living together, unmarried, and even married people without children is skyrocketing. So unmarried people living together, you know, for years is basically, you know, they're people that stay together for romantic reasons as opposed to any other reason. Well, I don't know. Or maybe they're just... So we know a lot of people that don't just decide to get married because of the stupidity.
Like, I was just the best man in my best friend's wedding. And
did you ask him, are you sure about this?
Yeah, a billion times. And he was. And like, you know, I know the kind of guy he is, so I know he wouldn't do something if he didn't want to do it. You know what I mean? I know he wouldn't let a lot of guys, I think, get pressured into it. I've talked to a lot of guys that are, like, unhappy in a relationship and will go through with a marriage because they figure that's what they should do. It's kind of like a defeatist attitude where they're just like, oh, this is it, you know.
I guess I have to.
Yeah. But he's not like that. And so that's the kind of thing. I know I have a couple friends that are married and super happy and super, like, successful, and they seem to love it. And then I know other people that are fucking miserable, you know. So
yeah, and then the divorce often creates... So there's a book called... Myth of Male Power. I don't know if you heard about it.
No.
It's
good though. Written by a chick.
No, it's written by a guy, a really smart one, and the book is very, you know, critically acclaimed. Like, it's not some trashy thing.
Right.
But it's written by a guy. Most of the fans of the book are women, despite the fact that so the main message of the book is that women actually have much more power than men. In our in modern society, when I first sort of,
I agree with that,
and he breaks it down brilliantly. Like, you guys should definitely read, especially if you're a woman listening to this. You should read it. He redefines what power means. He defines power as control over your own life. So I'm not sure that
that's brilliant, because a lot of men have lost complete control over their own lives.
Yeah. Well, due to the role that they're supposed to serve in society.
Right.
So, like, a lot of things he criticizes, you know, they work. There's a lot of arguments that require careful construction that he makes. So I recommend that you read the book instead. But I think some of the messages are, and I'm not sure you'll agree with this, but basically that men are from an early age encouraged to be violent to each other. And, you know, the draft is a big example he uses, that we create this vision of a strong man so that we can then push them out to do all the fighting for us. There's a lot of sort of examples like that that he gives. I'm not sure I completely agree with his definition of power. There is, so he says, for example, you know, if you look at Congress, the majority of people in Congress or the president is a man, at least so far. He says that that's not real power because the power there comes from the vote, from the people. But, you know, I disagree. There's a certain kind of still like that raw power of just leadership, like the ability to say, the ability to start wars, the ability to...
It's like...
be the head monkey in the tribe. Right.
And that's... So there's like physical... So let's take this back to pimp stuff, right? Mm-hmm. There's different kinds of pimps, right? So there's a guy like Iceberg Slim who was into bewitching, befuddling, and dazzling the chicks, like mentally. He got off on the mental thing. And once in a while, he would slap a girl around, but that wasn't his thing.
Yeah.
The pimps that do that are called gorilla pimps. The pimps that like beat the shit out of girls and to get them to do what they want. And they say that those kind of pimps aren't really respected as having good game, you know? And that's kind of the difference between the power that a man has is a power to be violent, to be direct, to take like direct action, which is something that women's power is in indirect.
Didn't Iceberg Slim kind of see himself as another prostitute? Like he's basically playing the same kind of game as them. So I think you're right. He's playing the chess game.
He did that when I don't know if that was when it came to sex. I think he said like he would never have sex with one of his girls if he hadn't gotten money from them first.
Yeah, he says, there's a quote, "I sexed more with conversation than I ever did with my penis or my tongue."
Yeah. Very good, I like that.
Yeah, the guy's a smooth motherfucker, I'll give him that. I think a lot of it, to be honest, feels like an invention of a brilliant writer. So, something tells me that the pimp life is a lot less glamorous and...
Well, in that book, he doesn't really make it out to... He talks about how awful it was. He talks about how he was addicted to heroin and coke and all that shit.
Yeah, but he still makes it sound cool. Like, there's a certain element of, like...
And that's why he's a hero.
If you look at a movie like... I don't know if there's a book, but Scarface. I doubt
The book is way better.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a multi-volume fucking brilliant book. But, you know, that's another movie where you take a criminal... But that's been glorified.
Yeah, it's weird how we do that, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure why. Like, what?
It's because it goes against.
Because they both played. They played by the rules of a different, not by the law rules, but by the rules of a different game.
Right. So they're doing something different than everybody else is doing. So if everybody's, you know, working in an office, and this guy, they see this guy. It's like Chris Rock said. He's like, they see a guy making money in a way that they perceive doesn't take any work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People think like drug dealers and pimps are lazy, but they're taking a huge risk and putting in a lot of work. Any successful, like there's drug dealers right down the street that stand on the corner and they probably make $50 a day and they use that to buy their own drugs. And then there's drug dealers that are supplying them that are probably making $5 million a day. You know what I mean? So, and that one is working much harder than the guy on the corner.
Although I have to say, I mean, I have much more respect for the pimp life than I do for the drug dealing profession, because the drug it's a pretty easy sell, right? You don't have to do much work.
You don't
work.
Think pussy is?
No, I'm sorry. I'm not talking about that kind of sell. I'm talking about like as a pimp, you have to sell to the girl the fact that she needs you.
Right.
That cell is pretty, it seems to me, that's what I think of about relationships, right?
See, that's because you're not meeting chicks at bus stations and, you know, like if you meet a girl that's like just walking on the corner by herself, you know, like an 18-year-old, yeah, then it's easy to make a girl like that.
But that girl has seen some shit. I mean, that girl has been through a lot of stuff. She knows, I mean, sure, I'm sure a lot of them have come up through tough childhoods, but I mean, they're ultimately about making money, aren't they? What is it in it?
No, they're not about making money because they...
Protection?
No, and I used to think that it was the way pimping worked was that the girl would go out, have sex, come back, and give the pimp like a cut of the money.
Yeah.
But what it really is the girl comes back and gives the guy all the money. She gets food, a place to stay, yeah. some clothes. He might treat her nice once in a while, but yeah. he doesn't really pay her.
Well, did you get a sense that they kept talking about, wasn't there a feeling of like love between probably a one-way kind of love of, well, a perception of love on the girl's part between her and the pimp, even though she knows there's a stable of other girls that they're kind of competing with, right?
Yeah, that's a weird thing that I don't see. That's the thing I want to learn how to do.
Well, isn't
that what, stable like that?
Well, but see, I got the sense that you know this kind of stable is a polygamous. Is that a term? Polygamous? Is that right?
Polygamous. I think that means you're
many wives.
Banging a bunch.
Yeah, but you can just think with one girl. Isn't that what a relationship is? And then you convince the girl that you love her. And the girl convinces you that she loves you in the sense that she's going to be loyal. You know, it's arguable who has the power in that whole.
It all depends, you know. So in some relationships, the man has all the power. Some relationships, the woman has all the power. Some is a little bit more equal, you know. And that's the thing is like going back to feminism a little bit. Like you can't really make two things that aren't equal. You can't force them to be equal. You know what I mean? There's men are better at certain things and women are better at certain things. It doesn't mean that one's overall better, but doesn't mean that they can be equal either, you know?
Yeah, so we're really struggling with that fact that, you know, there's these two creatures living together, you know, 50% of the human population is women, and we really seem to be uncomfortable with the fact that there could be some difference between them. Even, you know, we both do sports where we get to see, you know, women grapple other men or grapple each other, and you get to come face to face with the fact that women have structurally different bodies in generally speaking, and even that's uncomfortable. You know, like the upper body muscle mass is less for women, and even just saying that, you know, a lot of people like
men are bigger and stronger. All around.
That makes people
physically
uncomfortable.
Men are, in general, physically superior to women.
See, that
there's
a lot of people
wrong
uncomfortable.
With,
well, see, I think there's nothing wrong with it. I think.
And of course, there's going to be a case where a crazy athletic woman could beat a good athlete. You know
what
I mean?
Ronda Rousey, yep.
Yeah, and she might be able to beat some guys, but the best man versus the best woman in a physical, any kind of physical endeavor. The man is going to win.
When I did that catch wrestling tournament, there was one girl that showed up.
And she had to fight the guys?
I want to mention her
name. Did you fight her?
She was awesome. No. Oh. She was. She fought one of the guys. Like she was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the fact that she was a girl. It was the fact that she was by probably 40 or 50 pounds the lightest person there.
Yeah.
So she did a super fight with one of the guys. And it was very inspiring because she's actually a really high-level grappler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's she competes very often, and she fought one of the guys that was a little bit clueless because he was, like, a wrestler.
She
and it was
him?
Beautiful. She smoked him, yeah, nice. And she choked the shit out of him. You know, so we're constantly struggling with that. I mean, if you look at all the different sports, like grappling, actually, most of the sports in the Olympics are divided by women and men. As the the divisions were never combined.
Is in every sport? Is there any sport where women and men like go up against each other?
So, for example, in high school,
I know high school wrestling sometimes it happens,
and other sports too.
Well, jiu-jitsu too, like with the like teenagers sometimes, right. and kids.
I know those feel.
I feel horrible for that.
It's crushing to the guy's ego, for some reason. I mean, because culturally, it's just. The guy's expected to win, and it looks really bad if he loses. I remember when I never had to wrestle a girl, but some of my teammates had, and I'm ashamed to say it was a fear of mine to have to wrestle a girl.
Yeah. Because it's a complete lose-lose. If you lose, it's you got to walk around the rest of your life knowing that you lost to a girl in a physical confrontation. And then, but if you win, it's big deal. You beat a girl, you know? And I don't want to, like, I have women students, and I, for a long time, I was kind of against women doing jiu-jitsu and training.
Yeah, so what do you think about, I mean, you're now a coach of a bunch of women that are, you know, tough, yeah, tough-ass girls.
I got some awesome chicks to train, and that's, and really, that's what changed my whole opinion of it, was, like I said, I used to, like, hate seeing women on the mat. Like, it would just be like, they don't belong here. I don't know, it interrupts the sort of boys club mentality of like training and stuff.
And some sports have that more than, like, wrestling definitely struggled with that, but still struggles with that. It's because the room, there's a definitely guys mentality. It's like a, you don't see, like, another sport like that is football. You don't see girls playing football.
No. It feels like, I don't think a girl could go up against a guy and playing football.
But they could do a girl only.
Well, they have the lingerie bowl every year.
And, I think they wear pads?
Nah, this is just lingerie.
That's another argument for not wearing pads. It's it's safer when you don't.
But when I started teaching women, that was when I saw that the women in the class were taking it more serious and going harder and showing up more than a lot of the guys. And that really completely changed my view of it. Now I love teaching the women and seeing a woman like learn how to you know get better at it. But at the same time, if she goes up against a guy her level, who's physically superior to her, it's not gonna work out. And that's something that women have to understand. It doesn't mean that they can't become extremely proficient. It's just that at the end of the day, if skill is equal, the bigger, stronger person's almost always going
to
win.
Well, here, that's the question too. You don't get to test this much. Like judo is an example of a sport where it's for some reason really popular with women, whereas the number of women is almost the same as the number of men worldwide that practice it. And that's a grappling sport, but we don't get to see women go against men much. So there's always these kind of discussions at the bar, mm-hmm. whether this girl, like Ronda Rousey, could take, Travis Stevens or somebody. When they were competing, they were somewhat similar weights. So the question is always like, if the same number of girls practice jiu-jitsu, because this isn't jiu-jitsu supposed to be this art where the little person can defeat a larger, you can nullify a muscle.
Well, it is, but that's... That's a principle that's sort of based on the a skill versus unskill. You know, if it's two trained athletes,
that's the
big difference. You know what I mean? Because that's when you have to take into account, like, okay, so like I've worked in a lot of bars and stuff, and I've had like friends that were bouncers come and train jiu-jitsu, and I've seen them get tapped out by women, like big, strong bouncers. They were supposed to be tough guys that didn't know how to like do anything, and I've seen them get submitted by women and never show up again.
Yeah,
but so that's because the girl knew something and the guy didn't. Now, if that guy had trained for 2 years,
it might be a different story.
Yeah.
But technique prevails. If it's technique versus no technique.
Right.
There's this funny thing that comes up in this world of monogamy that we live in, is that of jealousy. So, in case people don't know, to clarify a certain aspect of exactly which monkey we evolved from, I think people think we've evolved from gorillas. But so the way gorillas carry themselves is there's an alpha male with very tiny dick and balls that basically fights another dude, and once he wins, he's going to be the head honcho that gets to sleep with all the women. That's why, and, you know, that's monogamous or whatever. That's
and the other gorilla crawls off into the jungle and jerks off his little dick.
Yes. And the women are all his, all the alpha males. So we come from bonobos, that's our closest relatives. And they fucked everything. They live in groups. Everything's communal. Everything is shared. There's no such thing as a wife, you know. Or at least if there's a wife, you have to share her vagina with everybody else. And that's, you know, that's like what that's amongst friends. You know, you share everything. It's like food. Sex is viewed as just another resource of.
Sex at Dawn, they talk about it a lot, and they say. They use it to settle conflicts. They use it to, just like, seal up bonds in between relationships and stuff. It's just like a, and I think they also say that it happens between every, it'll happen between like, I think the only one it doesn't happen with is between mother and son. Like dads fuck daughters, brothers fuck sisters. But I think mother and son are the only one that don't
fuck.
That's
interesting. That's...
Or it might be dads and daughters. I think it's one parent and one kid that doesn't fuck each other.
Paternity is really difficult to... So one of the reasons you want to have a lot of sex is that, as a girl, is you want to cloud... Like, you don't want anybody to know who the real father is. So that the idea is that everybody in the village will take care of the kid because it might be theirs. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a strategy of survival of your offspring is you sleep with a lot of guys and can convince them all that this kid could be yours.
It's like a primate Maury Povich show.
I don't know of such a thing. That's like a afternoon.
Oh, it's one of the, own a it's TV. One of the greatest things ever.
Really? What is it? Is it like Springer?
No, it's way better. I haven't watched it in years, but it used to just be all paternity tests. And it would be a girl would bring on like 20 dudes that she had fucked around the same time. And they'd all get tested. And sometimes none of them would be the father. Yeah, it was fun to watch.
That'd be hard to live through, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, so you don't get jealous, Tim Carpenter?
I remember with my first girlfriend, I got jealous about stuff, but that... it was just like me being insecure.
So you think jealousy is at the core insecurity?
I think so. It's like a fear, like you're afraid you're going to lose something.
So the idea of monogamy is actually, so I think it's Sex at Dawn says it, that it came about with agriculture when we started developing the idea of property.
Mm-hmm.
So that we saw, you know, that you can actually own another human being. As that's what marriage really was, is this ability, is contractual agreement that you're going to be...
But there's the quote from the Bible. I think there's the author at Sex at Dawn that said this. He said, the quote from the Bible is, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
But they stop there, and the rest of it is, or his house, or his servant, right. Or like, it's basically saying his property.
Right.
You shouldn't like want your neighbor's property.
You think you can ever act as if you have a right? Like, because jealousy ultimately is a belief that you have a right to this other human being.
And where are you going to stop wanting to control? You're never going to, like, own somebody's thoughts or desires or anything right. like that, you know? If anyone's being honest with you, they'll tell you that they still desire other people. They still look at other people and get attracted, no matter how much they love you.
Yeah, but you know? See, this is the conversation. So you think it's a perfectly normal it's something that you can withstand is a conversation where there's that kind of honesty where you say, you know what, if I would, you know, that girl over there, I would sleep with her if I had the opportunity.
Yeah, you should definitely be able to.
That thought's can pop into your head as you're sitting at a coffee shop or something. And
yeah, for sure. I mean, you should be able to have that kind of conversation without it ending your relationship. You know, and if the person's not going to listen to that or try to deny it,
yeah,
then they're living in a fairy tale world, you know?
Yeah, but so wait a minute. So another way of saying a fairy tale world is an emotional world. I think isn't that the kind of dichotomy between men and women that is off? It's stereotypical, but I found it to be somewhat true in my own life. Is that there's like what you're saying is very logical,
right? That's the problem.
And on an emotional level, it sounds like bullshit because it's like, what the fuck do you mean you would sleep with that girl? This kind of the marriage vows, this kind of idea that this is a fairy tale, we're going to be together forever.
Well, you might be together forever, but that doesn't mean you're not going to want to, you're not going to see other people and want to have sex with them. If, I've had the conversation with girls before where they would ask, would you want to sleep with that girl? Or do you think that girl's hot? I'd be like, yeah, I mean, if it was cool with you, I would fuck her and her friends, any other, like, if it was cool with you, you know what I mean? But,
she would ask first. Well, that's the
ideally.
I think there's a podcast I used to listen to because I have a sick fucking mind. I think it's called Savage Love.
Dan
Savage's podcast.
Yeah.
Savage Love.
I haven't heard his podcast, but I know his. He has an article in Philadelphia Weekly.
Yeah, so that's where I first. I mean, he like disturbs me a little bit because he's like really open to any. I mean, there's a lot of discussion of like really like the liquids involved in sex and everything. Oh, yeah. It just gets like it's a little too. It's too much even for me. But that's actually where I first heard about the furry party thing. So it's education. You should get you guys.
I think furries is like one of the least interesting of all perversions.
I think it's one of the funniest because
the image is kind of funny.
Yeah, but it's like almost like a Disney World. Yeah,
or do they just cut holes in them or what?
Don't you think it's one of the most perverted ones? Like, it's where imagination, like you're really creating an alternate universe. As a, well, maybe any kind of perversion.
That's what you're doing when you're jerking off, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so it's... You never think
about, like, normal missionary-style sex with the same girl over and over again when you're...
Speak for yourself, jerking off. fully dressed in my imagination. No, but see, Dan Savage said something, which is... It was about a girl was maintaining a relationship with her ex-boyfriend. Like, she was being friends with him. She would contact him back and forth, and the guy was getting really jealous. Her current boyfriend was getting really jealous. And Dan Savage's advice was for the girl not to stop the communication, but to not tell her boyfriend about the communication. Mm. He said that there needs to be a mutual understanding that you're not going to tell each other the truth about things that shouldn't bother you, but do bother you. Like, So like the fact that, you know, you saw another girl and then you wanted to, you know, she's hot as fuck and you wanted to do something with her. That's something you don't tell your girlfriend.
Right. Well, you don't come home and say, "Hey, I saw this girl at the movies. It was hot as shit."
But that's the same kind of principle. Like,
right.
The honesty. This is going back to the Iceberg Slim. I mean, you don't want to reveal. It is forever a game where you're both revealing just enough to maintain each other's interest. Perhaps this kind of full-on honesty is what's always there is a desire to be completely honest with each other, but you don't actually want to give in to that fully. You always want to pull back a little bit and maintain a mystery to the whole thing.
That's a good way to keep things interesting, but no one's ever completely open and honest, I don't think. Have you ever seen the Radical Honesty guy?
No, who's this?
I forget his name, but he's I think he wrote a book about it where he ran for office too, but he's basically like they ask him a question. They did a thing on NPR with him. It's like a little like 5-minute interview, and they ask him like, have you ever cheated on your wife? He's like, yeah, several times. I've had chlamydia, herpes, several times.
He's he's had an interesting life, too, where you can...
Yeah, he's like a doctor and stuff, but he's, and they're like, have you ever done drugs? He's like, I've done LSD, heroin, crack. I've done it all.
Wow. That must be liberating. You know, I have to say, you know, living a completely honest life, like, I make shit up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you ask me... I don't know, something like, how much did those pair of jeans cost? And they cost $20. For some reason, I'll tell you they cost $25. There's always a desire to live a slightly different life than you live. That's kind of something that I try to resist.
Something I do too. I try to be as straightforward and honest as possible, but
I think you achieved that pretty well, actually. That's one of the only people. Well, I don't know. See, it could be an act.
Nah, I fuck up once in a while, but for the most part, I stick to it, you know. But once in a while, you know, it's tough being honest. It's tougher up front being honest, but it's way easier in the long run, you know?
Yeah, it's an easier life. It's a happier life. I mean, you had to be...
It's like going up to a girl and asking for a number. It's scary at first, But then as soon as it's over, it's like, oh, it's not a big deal. whether you get the number or not. It's
That's right. I guess honesty is like these little... you're choosing the path of discomfort.
It's like we were talking about last week, was the acute stress versus the chronic stress, because dishonesty causes chronic stress, and honesty is just acute stress.
And some people get really used to living in that lie. We live in a generation where you kind of keep a life online as well as the one in real life. And, it's very easy to hypothetically talk to other girls online that very easily could lead to other stuff while you're also maintaining another relationship. And so it's this, I might have to edit this out because this relates to you, but I've gotten caught cheating because of Facebook.
Yeah.
And I feel like
how everybody gets caught cheating.
I feel like a lot of people get caught cheating because of Facebook or because of...
Until this kind of stuff like MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, all this shit came about, you didn't really have that much access to all the women in your area.
Right.
You couldn't just like go through looking. They couldn't go looking for you. If you were going to meet them, you had to bump into them somewhere.
Right.
You know? But now if you're bored and you're horny, you can like just... You might not even be horny. You might just be like looking around online one day. You see a hot girl, and or she sees you, she sends you a message. Like, that shit can happen. It's like the your choices.
Yeah, you have more options.
Huge,
and they're in front of easily
compared
accessible.
To what they were in like your parents or my parents' day.
And it doesn't have to be like we're talking about like hot chicks, but it could be just
chick. It's just attention. Everybody likes getting a little ego boost if a girl sends you a message and say, "Hey, you're cute."
Yeah, you know or I mean? A girl that you connect with on some other level.
I just had a girl from Vietnam send me a message on Facebook, told me that I was handsome and that she loved me.
That's awesome, man. That's
that was her.
Now, see if you were.
That was her opener.
Yeah, that was her opener.
You're handsome. I love you.
Well, she's direct. Now, if you were a girl, you'd probably milk that for months. For the emotional. I also get a sense that. The girls will play with that a little more and they'll lead guys on. Like I've seen, I don't fall victim to this. I don't think.
We've all fallen victim to it.
No, but like as regularly as some other guys do. But I've seen this concept of, like I don't have friends who are girls. Personally, it doesn't mean anything. It's just the way I am. But I don't believe that a guy and a girl... This is my personal opinion. I don't believe a guy and a girl can be like best friends, really close friends, because that's what a relationship is, ultimately. So whenever I see a guy and a girl who's best friends, it's often the guy actually deeply loves the girl, and and the girl completely ignores that fact.
Right.
And they hang out together.
And they use them to get free dinners and stuff.
Yes. It's not...
But it could go... Now, it goes the other way, too.
Yeah, it goes the other way.
It goes the other way sometimes. Guys and girls can't be best friends the way a guy and a guy can be best friends or a girl and a girl can be best friends. You know what I mean? They might be friends, but it's not, they're not, you're never best friends with a girl. If you think about like the best times in your life that you've had, like joking, fucking around, having a good time, laughing and stuff.
Yeah.
It's never with a girl.
Yeah.
It's always your friends.
We might be biased, the sample of two here is not sufficient to make generalizations.
It's not a sample of two. I've done extensive research.
Yeah, but you hang around with like fighters and like these tough ass dudes. Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to defend the idea that maybe we're generalizing too much. But I caught you at a right time that you're living alone right now for the moment.
Yeah.
And the percentage of people that. The number of people that live alone went from 13% to 28%. And that seems to be a trend. It was a steady trend. And it shows something that you started talking about, which is sort of a trend where monogamy is going, where relationships are going in the 21st century. You know, now that the women and men have all these options via Facebook and all these kind of things, do you think it's possible to maintain a relationship for like 40 years? Maybe not now, but as the new generations come up.
Sure. I think there's always going to be people that just want to settle down. They just want, you know.
But that's like the dominant thing now. I'm saying, do you think we might be moving to a world where like people will just for their whole life will just sleep around?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like, that's how it'll be.
I'll bet it's going to be weird to see this next like group of adults that comes up. You know, the people that are like growing up now.
Yeah.
That are, you know, let's say the kids that are like six now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They use Snapchat and like the sex apps.
Like how, when I was little, it was like, or not little, when I was like a teenager, it was hard to get like just porn. You didn't.
Yeah. Now we appreciate
porn. It's
hard to find out
what sex was like really like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Before you actually did it. Now kids are going to be seeing, they'll probably see it by the time they're like 8 years old. They'll probably stumble upon hardcore porn on the internet.
The craziest shit is right there in front of you. Parents, it's very difficult to have any kind of parental control. So they're going to see everything, and they're going to be completely desensitized. It almost is going to be like they're going to yearn for the times of like the 1950s, where it was like you like kiss on the first date.
Yeah.
Or no, I'm sorry. You kiss on like the 20th date, and like. You don't sleep together.
Do you think it was really like that? Do you think that's all like Hollywood bullshit? Do you think like, I guarantee you like guys had to be, like there's no way you could be that suppressed where like you put teenagers together in a car or at a movie and they're not going to like start fingering each other.
Yeah, I think you could. I think, let me give you one example. I think it would be very difficult to convince a girl on the first date to have anal. Back in the 50s, but I think it's more feasible to do so in the 21st century. So I think while you're right, like, yeah, of course, fucking teenagers are horny fucks, so they're going to do whatever they want to do, but the fact that they didn't have the exposure to sex and things like that, they probably didn't know what the fuck to do.
Like, did you read Ham on Rye? Bukowski's book?
Maybe parts of it.
Because there's a part in that. Because he grew up in like the 40s or 30s or something. And he writes, like all his books are kind of just like his life. And he writes about how kids in his school were like, one of the girls was like begging to get fucked by some guy in the school because she knew he had a big dick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think this, like,
yeah, it was there.
Things aren't different now. You know
You're
what
right.
I mean?
You're right. People have been having sex for a long time, doing a lot of freaky shit for a long time.
Everything was just way more suppressed and hidden back then. And I don't think people talked about it, you know? Like, I don't think there's more gay people now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's easier for people to be gay now, you know? It's easier for people to be open about it. There's probably always been the same percentage of gay people, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I think so, but, like, from watching the movies and stuff, I just can't imagine the people in the 50s. The way they interacted, the values they had, like, it just wasn't cool to fuck on the first date, right? Or, like, it wasn't cool to, like, women had a certain role of not being sexually promiscuous.
Right.
It wasn't, like, right now, the fuck is her name? Miley Cyrus. I mean, that's who the young girls look up to, right?
I guess. I don't know. I don't really...
I mean, like...
I don't run in those circles.
Well, yeah.
But no, I know what you're saying. That's like, I guess, a role model. But, I mean, all I ever hear about that is how awful she is. Do people really look up to her, or is she just like a...
Yeah, well, she just slightly crossed that line, though.
Yeah.
How
old is she?
20-something.
I saw some clips of that. I thought she looked fine. I thought she looked great.
Yeah.
She was kind of hot, actually.
Yeah. I don't understand why people were... She was trying to do something that's very difficult, which is she was like this like lollipop Disney whatever chick, and she was trying to make it so that people don't see her as that anymore. Like, they would see her as a, like, woman.
Right.
And that transition is really difficult to make. So she decided to just, like, whore it up on stage. And I think that's brilliant. You know, this is not... That's what Madonna would do. That's what... You know, I feel like that opened up... Now she can be, like, a actor in some fucking mob movie.
Yeah. She could do something different. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's one of the things that women are way better at than guys. Like, a guy couldn't... let's say Justin Bieber can't go out on stage and whip out his balls and fucking become a sex symbol from that, you know what I mean? Or become not thought of as a clown anymore, yeah. You know what I mean? Or maybe yeah. He would, I don't know. But I don't think it would work like that. Like, a guy can't use his sexuality really to right. Gain power over...
This is bullshit.
Right. But I have a... I found an article about... It was a, like a book from the 1950s.
Yeah.
And they have a thing about... It's about how to keep your man happy. 7 tips for keeping your man happy.
Let's hear them.
Number one is don't talk.
Is this like an advice column or something?
It's from a book. I think it has different excerpts from different books. It says, Sex Satisfaction and a Happy Marriage from Reverend Alfred Henry Tyrer. Do not ask for things. This is called nagging, is what it says.
That's number two?
No, that was part of Don't Talk. And then number two is, bad cooking will drive your man to seedy saloons. Let's see.
This is true. So far, this is pretty good.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, some of it's all right. And then
it sounds terrible, but...
Here's one. Yeah. And this is goes against what you would think of in the 50s. And that's the thing is, like, people look at that era as, like, that's, like, what people should aspire to be like. You know what I mean? Like, the happy family, like, the perfect right. American family. Mm-hmm. And if you look at this, it sounds like the worst thing in the world compared to... So it says... In case of an occasional lapse on the part of the husband, there a bit of advice may prove acceptable. And my advice would be, forgive and forget. Or still better, make believe that you know nothing. An occasional lapse from the straight path does not mean that he has ceased to love you. He may love you as much. He may love you a good deal more.
Yeah. That's such a true statement that's almost completely not acceptable
right.
within a relationship.
But I like this. It's the kind of thing I think back then. People, I think it's not that guys didn't do it back then. It's that it wasn't like the end of the world for you know what I mean. Like he's saying. I think if this was in like some sort of book from a doctor,
right?
You know,
I'm sure doctors gave the same kind of advice. But the problem is there was a double standard there that women were shunned if they did something like that. And
right.
That's really where the issue came about. And I think a girl without freedom is not an interesting girl. Like, you don't want to be controlling. You don't want to be jealous. I think you want to coexist with another human being in such a way that doesn't completely negatively... Like, the don't talk part of that is it...
It's a very simple way to put it, but it's something that...
It's like the iceberg slim thing. I mean, you should speak strategically. Like, your words have... It's all part of a... I mean, I hate saying the word game, but whatever the fuck it is, it all has value. Like, you're saying stuff or not saying stuff is part of what makes the relationship exciting. But don't talk just sounds like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty like...
You probably don't talk too much.
No.
You're known as a guy who's pretty quiet. And that's one of the things about this podcast that people have... Like, the number one thing that people told me about is they're really excited that they got to hear Tim Carpenter speak and that there's actually really good shit inside your brain.
Well, I will talk to anybody as long as you're interesting.
Interesting.
And, like, you know...
So you're not going to talk to anybody, are you?
No. Unless I deem them to be interesting.
Yeah.
Or unless they have a podcast.
Yeah, this is the trick. I figured out a way to speak with you. Where do you see yourself in 10 years and with a lady friend? You happen to be temporarily... Now, you were seeing a girl for five years. Is that your longest relationship?
Yeah, for sure. By about 2 or 3 years.
Some people would be surprised that Tim Carpenter was able to, with your philosophy on life, would maintain a relationship for that long.
Well, so am I. I don't know. And that's the thing is I don't put too much, I don't think like a romantic relationship is the height of achievement. You know what I mean? I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Nevertheless, were you? I mean, it's still a breakup.
I'm not talking about like I'm. You know, dealing with it my best.
But yeah, still, I mean, that stuff hurts just like any
yeah, it definitely hurts, but I'm,
even if you're the person that breaks it off.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't the one that broke it off. So it's tough to deal
with.
Yeah,
we know the story, so.
But, you know, I don't know where I see myself in 10 years. I don't really, it's not something that I'm too worried about yet. I don't know, I've never looked at the, you know, the typical plan of like, you know, get a job, get married, have kids. That's never really been the thing that I look to do.
Yeah, you don't feel the pressure of that. But still, do you think when you'll be sitting there like 50 years old and suppose that you were still alone, you know, with a bottle of whiskey, just with your, with a dog, do you see yourself feeling the pressure like, shit, I should probably get myself an old lady
I'm sure, but that's the thing is like, I had a girlfriend in the past, like when I was younger, and she used to say that. Like I've had pretty much every girl has like threatened me with the thing of like, you're going to end up alone.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm like, I doubt it.
They didn't get through you? So girls are good at psychological warfare. That's the purpose.
No, they're not good at it. They're not good at it. They're very predictable. And all like, you just got to be.
You just haven't been with the Sun Tzus of the fucking.
I've been with plenty of crazy chicks and chicks that were good at that kind of stuff, but you just got to be like Iceberg says, you got to be ice cold because they don't know.
Yeah.
They only know how to, if a girl says that and I feed into it,
trying to get emotion out of you.
If I don't give that emotion, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then they'll give up on that argument. But anyway, like, and that's the thing is like, I say, well, even if I'm 80 years old and I'm in like a fucking nursing home, I'm pretty sure I'm probably going to meet an 80-year-old chick in the nursing home that wants to hang out.
But so, this isn't something that
they don't like to hear that at all. They hate hearing that kind of shit.
Yeah. So to you, a relationship is not like a make or break type of thing. It's if you find somebody that's, like you said, you'll talk to anybody if they're interesting. So if you find somebody that really you want to hang out with, you'll.
Yeah, I mean, like, I thought after 5 years, I thought, you know, I was going to be with her for the future. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I never really think like that. I don't think in like forever.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like that kind of fairy tale language. Yeah. But yeah. I saw myself.
Because you're going to be dead pretty soon.
Most likely. But I don't really think in those terms.
But a lot of guys are really uncomfortable being single. Like,
yeah,
not
it's
just
like
single.
A weakness.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're in a state of flux that you have to like, if you're single, you have to be like out looking for shit. You almost have to force yourself into another relationship. And that, so what that results in a lot of times is guys get into a relationship that's not quite perfect. It's just like this kind of thing that relieves the pressure to be in a relationship, and then they'll kind of hang out with that person for comfort reasons because they're comfortable, and they won't have the balls to quit it when they know there's an instinct that, you know, that says this isn't right, this isn't a good, you know, this is not a good person for me to hang out with. So, but they'll stay there for years, and I know certain people. I'm tempted to reference my brother a lot. This,
no, I mean, I've done it. I've.
I mean, I guess we all stay in relationships.
Yeah, everybody's like
than
my
should.
First relationship. I remember thinking like, fuck. I remember thinking I was going to be with her forever, and being like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm going to be stuck like this forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was, but I didn't really have the balls to end it. But I was looking at a fucking horrible future. You know what I mean? Like it's not like it was her fault. It wasn't my fault. We were like young, dumb kids. Like we shouldn't have been in that situation.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, you know, I was with her for like 2 years, and maybe a year and a half was 6 months was good. And the year and a half was like, you know, me realizing like, fuck, I don't want to do this. But not being able to figure out a way to weasel my way out of it, you know?
I mean, it takes a lot of balls with anything, not just relationship, but when you feel that something is wrong, to walk away. Like,
I remember being, I found out she cheated on me.
Yeah.
And I remember being happy about it. Like I was like, it was, I was like, yes, this is my chance to get out, you know?
Yeah.
And then I remember getting pissed about it later for some reason. Yeah. That's like right. Cause
the biggest thing on your mind then was the stress of being in a relationship you don't want to be in. But later you're like, you realize the fucking,
but even that, it's weird. The tricks that your mind plays on you, like, I wasn't happy in the relationship. The relationship ended, and then I missed the relationship that I wasn't happy in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was just like a little bit. That means you might have stayed there for even longer.
Yeah,
that's so hard to do, to quit a situation that you shouldn't be in. I mean, one of the longest relationships, well, you have been in, and I'm working on that relationship, is the one with jiu-jitsu, for example, or just any kind of activity. I don't think I've done anything for as long. I mean, I'm pushing it even with the 4 years of jiu-jitsu. Yeah. It's pushing it for me.
And I've been doing it for... I've been trained. I did judo when I was 15 and then jiu-jitsu when I was like 17 or 18. So what's that? I'm not good at math. 33.
Fuck it. So that's 19. You're by far the longest relationship, brother.
Really. Yeah, for sure.
And you haven't quit that. Have you ever considered quitting jiu-jitsu?
No. It's never even been like a... Like, it's just, like, that's the one thing where I can see doing forever. You know what I mean?
you speak in the fairy tale language now. Now, why is that? What's the, because isn't the same thing as a relationship? If you define a relationship as you spend time with it.
It's way more than a relationship. Then, you know what I mean? It's because within jiu-jitsu, there's
people
there's just like, it's like your family. For me, it's a business now. It's like, it's supplied me with a living. It's done everything for me. Whereas like a relationship,
it's hard
with
to
a girl.
Compete, yeah.
What is it like? You get sex, companionship,
yeah.
Kids, maybe.
Yeah.
But like, if you're not really seeking to have kids and you're not really desperate for companionship or sex, really, it's like, what is it? You know.
Yeah, so this is definitely this is a good advertisement for jiu-jitsu. It's a much
better
more fulfilling
than sex, companionship, and kids.
There you have it. I thought we would, I'm glad we navigated these difficult waters of of talking about women, I think somewhat successfully, without offending anybody. Of course, as I said, we don't actually believe anything that was stated in this.
No, not at all. And I love women. I'm fortunate to have awesome women in my life, students, friends, moms, sisters, in-law, all that stuff. You know, I know like some really cool chicks, but I also know some despicable creatures.
Yeah.
So,
and the same goes for dudes.
Yeah, exactly.
I know some
plenty of despicable dudes.
And we're going to list them on the next podcast. We're going to make a list and call them out.
So we'll do a whole podcast on what's wrong with dudes.
That's one of the things we try to do, is to find a girl that...
I would love to have like this kind of conversation with
another girl.
A girl, like an honest, smart girl that's not going to get pissed off.
Right. That's not going to shut down completely.
Yeah, if we can find that.
It's intimidating, man. Sitting across the table from you, I actually just pissed my pants. it's tough to talk to.
We'll Skype it.
Maybe we
can go on one of those webcam sites, and instead of getting the chick to play with herself, we can just ask her questions.
Yeah, really get to the core. I think we're going to actually break her. If I learned anything from the Iceberg Slim book, and again, I'm not going to generalize about women in general, but the women in the sex industry have a difficult past that they come from. Of abuse and things like that. So they're deeply flawed characters. But I think we all have flaws in a much smaller way. We have difficult things that happen in our past that affect relationships. And that probably is what makes the whole fucking thing interesting. I hate one of the things I really like, maybe I'm just fucked up in the head, but I like girls that had that had some difficult shit happen in their life. Mm-hmm. They've gone through I hate to say it, but like a loss of a loved one or something of that nature, because that, you know, that for some reason creates a character that's like interesting to share a life with.
Yeah, of course. That's the, that's, if you were to talk to like someone like, fucking like Paris Hilton or somebody that's grown up with everything like taken care of for them, it's probably not going to be the best time of your life, you know what I mean? But when you hang out with people that have been through some shit, that's pretty much always an interesting time. Like, I worked at a strip club for a long time, and I had to, you know, I was around chicks. Some of the chicks there were, like, just straight-up prostitutes.
Yeah.
You know, drug addicts, all that shit. So, but they were very interesting people, some of them. Even if just for the fact that, just to watch them disintegrate into, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's still interesting. Way more interesting than working.
Yeah, 9-to-5 job, just like, you know, taking no risk in your life. I mean, fuck, being a stripper or being a prostitute is as much risk as I can imagine. I mean, on a daily basis, you're fucking putting yourself in situations that are dangerous.
The prostitute's got to be one of, like, up there with those
firefighter
fishermen.
Yeah.
It's one of the most dangerous jobs.
And they're fearless. Just imagine a girl getting naked, walking into a room of complete uncertainty. Like, there's so many assholes out there. Just look at YouTube comments.
Right.
There's some dirty fucking minds out there, and just
you have no idea from where the things that I've seen
with the strip club.
In the strip club, yeah. You know? That'll be for another day.
Yeah, there you go, folks. Surround yourself by people who have had some fucked up shit happen to them. This keeps life interesting. All right, thanks for talking to me, man.
Yeah, man. Anytime.